Hey, it's Paulette again, and I'm honored to bring you another episode here on the Thriving in Chaos Project, now in its fourth season. I bring you resilient survivors, key resources, and experts in their fields to lighten the load and shine a light on the path forward from confusion to conclusion through all things divorce and transformation. So let's get started. I am hosting a retreat in Belize. Some of you may know, but I used to live there. And Belize is a melting pot of culture that carries over into the food, the music, and the fun. It is the best of both vibes, from jungles to ground you and beaches to heal and soothe. I lived there for many years and go back and forth between there and Atlanta because I can't get enough. My co-host, Tiara, visited me and didn't want to leave either. No one does. This is paradise, folks. My co-host Tiara and I chatted about the perfect all-inclusive location for you ladies that are going through a pivot in your life and need to reset, renew, and rebuild, and we nailed it. We kick off with a three-day adventure in the luxurious eco-resort Copal Tree in the southern Belize jungle, followed by three luxurious days on Thatch Cay Island, a private island over water, oceanfront oasis in the turquoise Caribbean along the Belize Barrier Reef. Whether you're going through or just coming out of a divorce, especially with a narcissist, a career change, or you just want to get back to the parts of you that you haven't seen in a while, we are talking to you. Make note, May 4th to the 10th, 2024, and start packing. Space is very limited on the private island and in the jungle. Be sure to act now. We have a passion for leading truly transformational healing events, from heart-opening, accessible guided meditations to connection-based life-changing tools and practices. We curate each moment with care and compassion to ensure every lady is taken care of from the initial registration to the final namaste. It's better in Belize. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Thriving in Chaos Project. I am your host, Paulette Rigo. And if you know who I am, then join along again. And if you don't, I'm the founder of Better Divorce Academy as a credentialed mediator certified divorce coach. And I'm also the director of coaching and case management for Divorce Right, where we work with companies and their employees to help them avoid the pitfalls of divorce so that they can maintain their careers and stop lowering their productivity and quitting and all the other things that cost companies literally millions of dollars. So whether I am working with a couple or an individual or a company, my goal is to make divorce less complicated, less costly, and less painful. And today I bring to you a now friend, comrade, peer, and someone I highly respect in the divorce world. Her name is Karen Covey, and she is from the Chicago area. And I'm going to introduce her briefly with her story, but I'll also let her introduce herself. She really lifted and elevated the divorce experience for me, but she's an author, an attorney, a member of the American Bar Association. She lives in Chicago. She's appeared in TV, radio, and podcasts. She's an author of When Happily Ever After Ends. So I am so happy that you're here, Karen. Thanks, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Paulette. It is a pleasure to be here. I am really looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. I mean, we met back at the National Association of Divorce Professionals Conference, back when people actually did that well, we're doing it again, but prior to the whole pandemic insanity back down in Florida, I think it was in 2019, right? And you were one of the guest speakers, and I just loved your enthusiasm and your brilliance. And I said, I want to get to know that woman. So here we are. And again, though most of you know, like, I didn't find this work. It found me. I had many other careers. I was happy in those careers, some of them happier than others, but I'm sure most of you can relate to that, right? And then we grow and change and evolve in our careers, as Karen and I both have. So tell everybody a little bit about your background. You know, you're a law professor, an arbitrator, a mediator. You've got a gorgeous resume. We could spend a long time speaking about all your education and your experience, but what's your story and why do you do what you do?
Well, that's interesting, as they say. So I started my career coming out of law school as a trial lawyer because I didn't see any reason to be a lawyer if you weren't going to try cases, right? So I was a jury trial lawyer. And then I did that for seven years-ish. And then went from there to the state's attorney's office. I ran the civil bureau, which was a bureau of 100 lawyers at the time. I managed them, did all the work for the county, and then at some point decided I'm going to do the lawyer thing. I'm going to hang up my own shingle, and here we go. So I did that, and I had no idea what I was doing, like zero idea how to run a business, right? And so I sent business cards and little postcards and things to every human being I had ever met in my life. Anybody, if I had your address, they got a card. And this was before the days of email. So it was all snail mail, right? And people would come to me and they'd say, you know, what do you do? And I'd say, I'll take any kind of case in the world except divorce. And you know what they say, when you make plans, God or the universe or whatever you call the power that is, laughs. Well, he was laughing at me because client after client kept coming in and saying, hey, Karen, can you help me with my divorce? Hey, Karen, I need a divorce lawyer. And finally, literally, I was sitting alone in my office. I was like, okay, I threw up my hands and said, I will do divorce. But because I had a decade of experience going into being a divorce lawyer, when I got to divorce court, I looked around, I said, well, this doesn't make any sense. Like, it just, the way the system worked didn't make sense to me. And I was a lawyer. So I thought, heavens, how is it going to make any sense to the people who are actually caught in this system? So from day one of me doing divorce, I kept trying to find a better way. And that's why I immediately became a mediator. I became an arbitrator. Once collaborative divorce came out, I became a collaborative divorce lawyer. I kept trying to find better ways to get through a really horrible situation so that people didn't have to suffer so much. So that's how I got to where I'm at today. You know, at some point decided to morph into a coach.
And a beautiful transition. In fact, a client of mine is a Canadian attorney who met me, I don't remember exactly how, it might have been on Clubhouse or something 3 or 4 years ago when that all came about. And she said, I'm an attorney, but I do not want to be a law attorney anymore. I mean, a family law attorney anymore. I want to do what you do. And I was like, what? So this is crazy. So she transitioned from that into more of the work that I've been doing. But what an honor, right? To have somebody say, like, wait, you want to do what I'm doing? Like, that's, she goes, yeah, I just want you to teach me how to be you. So it was a kind of a friendly a joke that we had, but you know what, Karen, she's doing it. So I do want to take a little bit of a step back because you mentioned that when you first graduated from law school or when you were a new attorney and you, you know, put the shingle out, you know, the sign out on the building, and you had the business cards and you sent out the letters and everything, that you really didn't know what you were doing, like the business side of it, right? If I remember that correctly, you said, and that's kind of funny because, you know, you graduate, well, you graduate and pass the bar exam and all that nightmare. And, you know, not to say that that doesn't take a tremendous amount of hard work and study and money and all that, but there seems not to be the connect between the people I know and that are attorneys with that side of it, but also the transition into the business world, because it is truly a business. And, you know, you're learning to advocate for one side, to advocate for your client and their best interest and what it is that is applicable to the law, to their situation, and in whatever form of law you're practicing, naturally, whether it be real estate or bankruptcy or criminal or family, or I don't know how many different types of law there are, but there's a lot kind of like medicine, right? You go to med school and then you decide what kind of a doctor you want to be, and or you go to law school and then you decide what kind of attorney you want to be. And sometimes it's a backwards mindset of like, who do I really want to serve specifically? You know, being a dentist is very different than being a heart surgeon, and being a bankruptcy attorney is very different than being, well, a real estate attorney. And, you know, there are there parallels, yes, but back to my topic, it is truly a business. And I think that can be a little bit overwhelming and confusing to many professionals when they come into this thinking, I did my due diligence, I did my work, I've got the degree, and here I am. And, and now what, right? And picking that niche, shall we say, of what it is and who exactly you want to serve can be challenging. I've learned a little bit that the statistics are something like there's 1.2 million attorneys in the United States. Am I wrong?
Do you know? I don't know. I don't know the total number off the top of my head, but I would
please,
agree with that.
Please don't send me a letter saying I'm wrong, but whatever the letter is, there's a lot. But there were only something like 60,000 family law attorneys, something like that. I'm going to have to get my numbers. Do you know? So I'm going to do my research. But the point is, there's not, it's a smaller percentage, right? It isn't like 50% of attorneys are family
law. No. And I will say, you know, people don't realize this, but there's, just as there is probably a pecking order in medicine in terms of status and prestige, so too is there that pecking order among lawyers. And probably, you know, on the top of the food chain are the corporate lawyers, the M&A, the ones that do, you know, the big, huge multi-million or multi-billion dollar deals, right? And then you sort of filter down, you know, from there. And somewhere as you go lower on the food chain, you get your sole practitioner, you get your individual attorney, the attorney, what I like to think of as an attorney for the people, right? Mm-hmm. Because I had the opportunity to work for the big corporations. I had the opportunity to do all the things. And to me, that wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with real human beings. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make a difference. Yeah. And so the whole corporate thing, it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't my jam. Sure. So I started, you know, I started in a firm and did, you know, did that and then worked for the government. But then when I started my own practice, I wanted to help people. And I know lawyers get a bad rap, but there are plenty of them out there who really do. They're just like me. They wanted to make a difference. They wanted to help in a variety, whatever their flavor of helping was. Some people do civil rights. Some people do, you know, personal injuries. Some people, like, it's all different kinds of lawyers.
Or criminal. Or,
right. Yeah. But the bottom line is, you wanted to make a difference and you wanted to help people. And that's what I wanted to do once I got into the family law realm and say, okay, I may not have gone to law school thinking this exact thing was what I'm going to do, but now that I have found it, I am going to do it with my whole heart and soul. And I'm going to try to make this slice of life a little bit less miserable for the people who have to go through it.
Beautiful. You know, some of my best friends are attorneys, and I know attorneys get a bad rap here and there, and some of them deserve it. Most of them don't. It's kind of like jokes. There are probably as many blonde jokes as there are attorney jokes. And watch out, because Karen is both. So
yeah, I get both of those.
I'm
right?
sure you so. Do, right? So let perfect. Talk to me a little bit about what that tipping point was, where you said, I no longer want to be a family law attorney, you know, in that trajectory, but I want to shift my work a little bit more in the world of more mediation and coaching. Did you have a wake up moment? Like, what happened that made you change your mind?
It was a gradual morphing, right?
Okay.
But what I realized, I would sit in the courtroom back in the days when court was court and not on Zoom. And you would sit in the courtroom.
What was that? Oh, yes. I remember now. It's all.
Yeah. You know, the big tall paneled walls and the judge sitting up on.
Yeah. High. And there's benches and all. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so I would go to court and I would watch lawyers coming in with their clients. And I would watch people They were terrified. They would make bad decisions. They would do and say the wrong thing. I mean, and I realized after watching this over and over and over again, it's not that people were stupid. It was that they didn't understand how this system worked. And this is, you know, going through a divorce is like going through anything else in life, any other major life event. If you don't know what you're doing, you are not going to do as well. Period. Full stop. And oh, so I realized that people were assuming that their lawyer was going to explain everything to them. How does this work? Tell them what they needed to do, lay out all their choices, lay out the strategy, blah, 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 blah. That's not what lawyers do. Lawyers are busy. They don't have enough time. They don't, you know, and a lot of them, I hate to say it, there is a percentage that really don't care and they are in it for the money. And the ones that do care are overwhelmed because they have so many clients because right. people gravitate towards them because they actually give a damn about their clients, right? And so people were expecting lawyers to do something that lawyers just don't do. Lawyers are, they're going to litigate your case. They're going to write up all your paperwork. They're going to help you negotiate. They're going to get you through the court system, but they are not going to sit down and explain, here's how everything works. Here's what your choices are. Here's how you put together all the pieces of divorce, because divorce is really, for most people, only about 10% legal. I mean, your case, Paulette, was a lot different because you were litigating till the cows came home, right? You went all the way up to the state Supreme Court. Most people do not do that. And so for most people, their divorce is all the other stuff that has to get managed. Their finances, their kids, their social life, their home, their all the practical things, everything is changing. And if you don't do the right things in the right order, you make mistakes. Yeah. And if you don't know what's coming down the pike so that you can prepare for it, you're hit taken by surprise. And again, you're not likely to do as well as if you had some time to think about things before you were in the situation of making a decision. So that's what I saw as, you know, happening to people. And I didn't think it was right. And I didn't think it was right for attorneys to make decisions for their clients, because that happens too. I think it's your life. You have the right to live the way that you want, but you can't do that if you don't understand how the system around you works. So I decided to fill that gap and to walk in and to be able to help people, and not just in my state, but then by being a coach, I work all over the world with people and helping them understand what they're doing so they can do it better.
Right. So you're singing to the choir. Yeah. So you mentioned that it wasn't a moment. There wasn't a tipping point or a straw that broke the camel's back, but there was a morphing, or a, shall we say, a gradual, peeling back the layers of like, this isn't a one-time thing, but this is a pattern where you were seeing people in the courtroom unprepared, terrified, fearful, out of, like you said, they just didn't have the knowledge, the understanding, nor the support that they really needed so that they could move forward with confidence and wisdom and strength, because it takes a lot of resiliency. Even if you don't have a case like mine was 8.5 years with a 12-day trial and a 4-year state Supreme Appellate Court process, that won't be yours because it's only 0.001% of all divorce cases. So take a deep sigh of relief right now. That likely will not happen. But my expertise is more in those contentious cases because of my personal experience, where I can help them get through. Oh, because the average amount of time I work with clients is years, because that's how long, you know, cases take. So now that we've both made these, shall we say, imprints or, you know, indelible marks in the experience of how divorce can be better. It can be smoother, faster. I don't want to say easier. I hate to use that word easier, but, you know, it's just a better experience. But you have started to create, or just observations about managing the fear of divorce. right? So I want to review with everyone as we now have gone into this, why we do what we do, because can you tell we're a little bit enthusiastic. And the beauty also too, is that we're not limited to a zip code, to a county, to one courthouse, to one area, one state, right? Which is great. Now I cannot memorize all the laws in Canada and the US and Central America and Europe. And, you know, so I try not to be an expert in any way, shape, or form about each country's and each area's laws, because you can't be. And again, we don't, I'm not a lawyer and I don't give legal advice. And, you know, Karen, I don't know, you're only licensed to practice in Illinois.
Correct. So even though I am a lawyer, I am not going to give my clients legal advice in any state other than Illinois.
Right.
However, what I can do is tell them what questions to ask their lawyer.
Absolutely.
And how to actually get answers that they can use. Because lawyers have a tendency, you know, just because of how we're trained, we can't give guarantees to anyone. No. And so, you know, somebody says, well, what am I likely to get for maintenance, for example, or alimony, child support, name whatever, right? And so the lawyer is going to say, well, you know, I can't make you any promises and I don't know, but the answer is it depends. Well, that's true. It does depend, but that's not useful information. That doesn't help you make a decision. So mm-hmm. I coach my clients in how to ask better questions so they get better answers.
Yeah,
and then
thorough.
With the right information, mm-hmm. they can start to make decisions that will move them closer towards their goal instead of farther away.
Right. They're not walking down the path with this willy-nilly, airy, fairy ideal of what is the wish, a hope, a prayer, and a dream, but they're able to have a little bit more of a roadmap, or what I like to call a blueprint, right? They
kind of know. 100%. And the thing about lawyers is, like it or not, we are an authority figure, right? I am an authority figure in a courtroom. And the whole system is set up to reinforce that, right? So a lot of times a client will ask a lawyer a question and they get some sort, you know, an answer like it depends. And then they're like, oh, okay, I guess, you know, it depends. And they stop and they leave it at that. What they don't realize is that the lawyer is not trying to purposely be vague, not trying to mislead them, and doesn't even know what they're really getting at. And there are ways to ask follow-up questions mm-hmm. that will get them useful information.
Yes. And having useful information is part of the leverage and the strategy in your case, right? So I want to shift a little here again, right? Of understanding everyone that being afraid to get divorced or being afraid of the divorce process, and it's both, you know, both ways of seeing it, is normal. There's nothing, no shame in that. Join the club, get to the back of the line. It is a normal feeling, emotion, thought to have fear, stress, a little bit of nervousness about it because, well, it's not something that most people do on a daily basis. This isn't brushing your teeth. And you could probably always get a little bit wiser and better at techniques with that too, right? According to most dental hygienists, right? You go. And so something you think you already know how to do, you can still learn and refine and improve upon. So therefore, something that you don't know how to do, you're going to also have to need to learn and refine and improve upon. So let go of the fear that it's not normal. Like you're not broken. There's perfectly okay. Now we don't want it to get to a level of insane anxiety, but you know, managing the fear, and this is where having a coach helps. So I would like Karen, you to kind of jump into the hard truth about divorce, what fear does to you, how to deal with the fear of divorce, and this wonderful article that you have on your, I just got the other day. So we're sharing, but she's written down 10 tips to help you deal with your fear of divorce. And number one is getting the facts. So what does that mean? I always say that to people, but what facts? Why do we need facts?
Well, that is actually a perfect segue to what we were just talking about, because when you don't understand how something works, of course you're terrified. Because you don't know if you're walking into a buzzsaw. And sometimes in a divorce, that's exactly what you're walking into.
Mm-hmm.
And so understanding, you know, how the system works, knowing what the facts are. Of, you know, when I say facts, I also mean the law. What is the law in your state as it relates to your divorce. How is that going to apply to you? How does the system work in your area? Because every divorce system or every divorce court is a little bit different, right? So understanding how that works, understanding what's going to be expected of you, understanding what you can expect of your lawyers, understanding your own personal financial situation, which is an area that a lot of people, you know, they don't understand, because typically in marriages, not always, but in a lot of marriages, there was one person who was the one who did the finances and the other person did other things. It's divide and conquer. You do that in marriage, right? But then that means that the person who wasn't used to handling the money often is clueless about how much they have, what comes in, what goes out, how it all happens. Well, when you're getting a divorce, you need to know that. And there's a lot of shame around that. Like, oh, I should have known this. How could I have been so stupid? You know, people say that all the time to me, and that's not helpful. That's not the point. The point is you are where you are. And to your point, Paulette, you're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you. You made a choice up to this point to focus on other things. Okay, that's fine. Now let's focus on this. Mm-hmm. Now let's focus on getting the facts, because people conjure up in their head all kinds of crazy ideas about what's going to happen or not happen. And a lot of times those are way different than the reality that they're going to be facing. So step number one is always get the facts, understand what the truth is about what you're facing, and that will immediately lift a load of anxiety off of you.
Right. It's also just understanding the demeanor and the formality of a courtroom. Even if it's on Zoom now and it's more of a virtual environment, there's still a formality. You know, the judges wear a robe, and you also have to understand what you should wear, what you should not wear, what you should say, what you shouldn't say. You know, really having that calm understanding of the procedural step-by-step-by-step events of the day in a courtroom, you know, only because I spent nearly a decade hanging out in many different courtrooms do I feel like I have not only personal and professional experience in, but most people don't. And it's so formal, even from the metal detectors and the security and the bailiff and who are all the different people and what are they doing here? And it's like this foreign environment to so many people.
100%. And I just want to put in a word here about Zoom court, because still all, you know, depending on where you live, many courtrooms are in some kind of a hybrid mode, right? Which is actually a good thing, because it saves your lawyer, therefore you, time in court to, you know, when you can just have a 5-minute court hearing on Zoom, that's a whole, they don't have to charge you for getting all the way to the courtroom, waiting for everybody else, getting back from the courtroom. So this is actually a good thing. But right. When you're going to Zoom court, remember, it is court. Do not show up in your pajamas. Don't, you know, have like, you're in a frame, right? The video frames you. Don't have like all kinds of garbage behind you, or be in your bed, or this is still court. Right. It deserves your respect. And you are going to do better if you respect the judge and the court system by showing up on time, dressed in normal clothes, at least from your waist up. And, you know, and respect.
And not having animals and children running around. And like you said, be mindful of your background. And if your background isn't so attractive, that's fine. Use a virtual background. Use a scrim, a blank white green space, or whatever it's called, right? You know what I'm talking about.
The green
screen. Because it is important that you have that formal, professional decorum, right? It's just a key to it. So let's move on a little bit. So connect with your power. What does that mean?
I'm going to go a little woo-woo on you. And I know
you can't go too woo-woo with me. Everyone knows I'm a yoga teacher and all those other weird things. So
So we all have a power inside of us, and different people call it different things. And please understand, this is not a religious statement. This is a spiritual statement. Mm-hmm. We all have that power. And what happens in divorce is when we let the fear is something outside coming in. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is focus on the inside and bring it out. So what that means is calm down, because fear makes you run around like a crazy person. It's going to do one of two things. It's either going to make you run around like a chicken with your head cut off, doing, but not really getting anything done, or it's going to totally paralyze you and stop you dead in your tracks. Neither one of those is helpful. What you want to do is recenter yourself, connect with your power, whatever you call that power, and go quiet and go inside. And when you do that, you are going to not think, but feel the truth of your situation, and that will help guide you and calm down your fears so that you can take the next right step.
Mm. And if you have a little personal mantra or theme song or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that's always nice to repeat in your head silently to yourself if you're ruminating negative thoughts or you're just wanting to say something and engage when you know you shouldn't or you believe that wouldn't be the right thing. Having something, particularly if you're hanging around a long time, whether that be a book or a notebook or something to keep yourself quiet and centered and grounded, which leads to number three, breathing, which got me through 8.5 years of court. There's a reason I learned advanced forms of pranayama. So not that we're having a lesson on that, but yes, you have to. I'm a big proponent of that. So
you know what I really like about breathing? And I teach my clients just simple box breathing. Mm-hmm. You breathe in for 4 counts, you hold for 4 counts. You breathe out for 4 counts, you hold for 4 counts. And you just do that again and again. And what the breathing techniques will do is immediately bring down your blood pressure, bring down your anxiety, bring down your fear level. And here's the kicker. No one knows you're doing it.
Nobody.
So yeah. It's not like it's some trick or technique and somebody can go, ha, you're breathing. You know, I mean, of course you're breathing. Right? Everybody's breathing. You know, it's really, and it's very, very helpful when you feel that anxiety start to well up in you, to use your breath to calm your body.
Mm. I like to use the word retain the breath instead of hold. Sometimes people get a little bit of fear, but I have to hold my breath. But think of it as like you're retaining it, like it's on a little bit of a plateau or a bridge. Whereas, you know, when you were a kid and you were learning to swim and they'd say you have to hold your breath. So, and also if you have extensive anxiety, you want to make your exhalation twice as long as your inhale. So in that situation, the box breathing kind of neutralizes the nervous system, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. But if you really get it, you're feeling like your heart is pounding and you're feeling sweaty and nervous, you want to inhale for 4, not really retain too long, just a little retention, like a little rainbow, a little arc. And then the exhale will be 8 counts because that will really slow down the nervous system. So as long as you're breathing, but breathe mindfully and into the belly. So it's not in the throat or in the chest, but way down in the vagus nerve. So there's your biology lesson for the day, everybody. Get out of your head and into your body, number 4.
Yeah, when we're in our heads, we make ourselves crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just you start getting on that hamster wheel of, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? And like your thoughts can take over. And the next thing you know, you are completely out of control and you've just ramped up your anxiety. So depending on where you're at, like obviously if you're in the middle of a court hearing, this doesn't work so well, but if you're in a deposition, if you're in your attorney's office, if you're, you know, if you're just talking to your spouse or soon to be ex-spouse and you feel your anxiety going up, take a deep breath and say, you know what? I need a break, and go out and take a 20-minute walk, 15-minute mm-hmm. walk. Just clear your head, walk around, breathe. Exercise also is super, super, super important in, you know, dealing with your fear, because, you know, it will also help calm your emotions. So regular exercise, absolutely. But what I'm talking about here is in the moment when you feel the fear, do something physical and redirect your focus to your body, not all the stuff going on in your head.
Yeah. You need to dial down the mind and amp up the body so you're more yes. into your physical, visceral body, right? Going out in nature, walking barefoot, maybe you can't do that in Chicago in the winter, but you know, all of us people from the north, but whatever, you want to reconnect to the physical body and not being in your mind. Now that leads to clearing your mind. Not quite so easy. Some people have a very active mind, but what are some nice ways that you ask people or suggest they clear their mind?
If you just say clear your mind, it's like, don't think of an elephant in the room, right? What are you going to think? You're immediately going to think of the elephant in the room.
Right.
So you need to have something to refocus on, to replace it with. Now, for some people, if they're religious, if prayer works, like repeating a certain prayer, that's beautiful. If you're not religious, you want to repeat a mantra, like everything is working out for my best interest. I'm being guided by my higher power. Nothing can hurt me. This is all working out. Whatever your mantra is, and if you don't have one, make one up. There's a zillion. So you can do that. But the idea is to refocus, to focus on gratitude, to focus on what you're thankful for and not what you're afraid of, because fear and gratitude cannot coexist in the same person at the same time.
Right. Yeah. Having a mind that's like, I always think of it as like a whiteboard where you can erase it. Right. And that sort of vision of having like a blank piece of poster board where there's nothing on it and you can keep returning to the blankness and the whiteness and the clearness. And yes, a thought will come along, a little thought, a memory, something, a word, an emotion. That's okay. Just whiteboard it again, like that Etch-a-Sketch thing. Remember that thing?
And you
think of that like visual of like, I'm going to Etch-a-Sketch my brain and just shake it like dogs do. They kind of shake it off, right? Shake it off. So yeah. And next one, get yourself into action.
Yeah. It's that idea of moving or doing something. Fear can paralyze you, but if you stay stuck in that indecision, in that paralysis, in that whatever it is, the fear just grows. It keeps getting bigger. It keeps. So the quickest way, one of the best ways to get pushed through that is just to move. Get into action, do something. Now, everybody thinks unless they do everything at once, it doesn't count. That's not true. Baby steps matter. And sometimes taking a baby step is all you can manage for that moment. And that's fine. Take that baby step, because what people, it's like the idea of compound interest. People don't realize that if you just take a little step and then a little step and then a little step, but you take those little steps every day, at the end of the week, month, year, you're so much farther along than if you would have tried to take that whole leap in one jump and fallen flat on your face.
Yes, even if you take the smallest incremental baby step, it is going to move you forward. It's when you're in analysis paralysis, where you're overthinking and thinking and thinking, and you do nothing because you're contemplating beating the dead horse. I hate that expression, but you know, you're just like, poor horse, he's dead, stop it. So the mind and your fears are going to take over with that. The more that you're able to just find one little way to make some progress, I always like to suggest that you get some sort of productivity planner. This is a wonderful one. It's by a company called Intelligent Change, but I don't care what brand you use, you know, but something that's going to have you have an action plan. So even if it's, what one thing can I do today that's going to move me forward, instead of looking back and being stuck in the woulda, coulda, shoulda, and all the regret and the fear and the guilt and the shame and the mistakes and the ruminating about your fears and all of the mistakes you made. Well, we all make them, join the club, but making a commitment to move forward with action and having goals and keeping that clear with you, like something small that you can throw in your backpack or your purse, or it's by your desk or your nightstand, or even on your confidential memo. Because if you're in a marriage where you're still cohabitating and going through divorce, a lot of fear comes from, well, what if they read my private thoughts? What if they access my whatever it is? Right. So plan ahead and make sure you have that private space, that place that's sacred, that you can sleep at night knowing that your spouse isn't going to access your journal, your diary. I can't tell you how many relationships have gone off the rails because somebody read their private thoughts or their private planning. So have something secure. But whatever it is, take a baby step. I love this one. Number seven, it happens to be, think of the best instead of the worst. It's like, what could happen? We, you know, so yeah, occasionally now it's okay to think about what, you know, some risks and consequences of behavior, sure, right? But we don't always want to be like thinking eternal optimist and living in Disney World. But on the other hand, you've got to be a positive person. What is the best that can happen?
Yeah, I mean, we have, our brains are hardwired to keep us safe, right? That's your brain's real job, is to keep you safe so that the species can continue on into eternity or however long we're going to continue, who knows? And so we always think of the worst, because if you think of the worst and you see it, you can avoid a danger. If you're not thinking of the worst and you don't avoid the danger, bad things happen. So your brain will naturally come up with what is the worst thing that can happen. You don't have to work on that. It will happen. What you can retrain your brain to do, though, is to say, okay, all these horrible things can happen, but what else could happen? What good things could happen? And I will say this. I mean, I have been doing this work a long, long time, and I have seen so many people who come out the other side and say, this wasn't what I wanted. I never would have chosen to go through all this stuff that I went through. But now that I have, there's some good that came out of it. I am better. I am stronger. I am more confident. I am, you know, and on and on and on. They've grown from the experience. So there are positive things that can come out of your divorce. Not that you wanted to go through the hell to get to them, but, you know, life is what it is. Right. But instead of focusing on everything that can go wrong, you know, be aware of that, but focus on what could go right and how you can make things better.
Right. Catastrophizing is never a good idea when you're going through any sort of life change and a stressful situation. Let the fears go and move forward with the positive as best you can, which leads to not doing it alone and trying to make sure that you have the support that you need. I know that there are, I'm going to say, thousands of support groups out there in person. It could be a church, it could be a civic group, it could be a women's group or a men's group. It doesn't really matter what the organization is, but I know they exist in person. But now, because of the virtual growth of the world, if you can't find a support group, well, let me tell you, we got to talk, because they're just all the place over. You just shouldn't have too much trouble. So, you know, whether you find it on a Facebook group or you find it in a local support group, make sure that you find one. Do you have some great advice about the best way for people to find support groups?
I would, first of all, ask around locally. If you're looking for in person, the best way is to search locally or use technology to find the in-person one. Mm-hmm. Like go to an in-person or go to a virtual Facebook group for a mom's group, for example, and say, hey, does anyone know a good local in-person divorce support group? That having been said, there are also a lot of great resources online. So for those people who don't live in like a densely populated city, mm-hmm. you know, if you're out in a more rural area, there may not be the resources. And so you really, but all you have to do is ask around and go to some of the websites like Paulette, you know, listen to this podcast. Go to my blog, go to different places, look for support groups. There are so many. But right. when you're by yourself, we all have a tendency to think, I'm the only one. This has never happened to anyone else before. It's all me. It's all my fault. You feel so alone. And that mm-hmm. in and of itself raises our anxiety. We are social creatures.
Yeah.
So finding that group can be critical to you having a better experience as you're going through this and ending up in a better place.
Mm. I wish to God I had found one back when I was going through my divorce. I don't know that there was a divorce support group in the area back when I was going through mine, but man, Karen, would it have made a huge difference, because I felt like an island. I knew other people that were divorced, and I knew other people just like me that were, you know, having those internal dialogues with themselves, but every situation is highly different. But I suggest and encourage anyone listening that it is empowering and inspiring when you meet other people and women like yourself, whether you may not meet people your exact age or your exact socioeconomic, whatever, you know, they're going to look and feel and be different than you. But the one thing that you'll have together is the fact that whether you're contemplating, experiencing, surviving, or trying to heal from a divorce experience, the empathy and understanding that you'll experience is so key. So listen to Karen and I, get some sort of support group. And if you find one and it's not a good fit, don't give up. Say, thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure meeting you. Move on. Find another one. It's like a restaurant. Thank God there's more than one. You know, you have the opportunity. You're not a tree. You can move. So, you know, be malleable. Put yourself out there. I know it feels vulnerable, but they're in the same situation you are. And know that it's, you know, what do we say? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. There is a level of confidentiality. Like any sort of support group, it's kind of a unwritten notice that we are here to vent, yes, but support each other. So,
and you know I just wanted to throw in, that is the beauty of the online support groups, because you can lurk. And you know, for any of your listeners who are interested, I have an online support Facebook group. It's free. It's called Thrive Through Uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And I made it during the pandemic because we all were so desperate for community. And it is for men and women, right? Which is also unique because most of the groups are one gender or the other.
Right.
So men and women are welcome to join. And what's important is people at every stage of the process. I've got people in that group who are just thinking about it. I've got people who are already through the divorce and have stuck around, Paulette, like you, to help other people after they've been through the process. Mm-hmm. So there's a place for everybody. And if you're interested, just check it out. No harm, no foul. You'll get in.
It's wonderful. Yeah, just send an invite and you can be let in and all that, right? And a little bit of vetting to make sure that ex-spouses aren't in there and all that. So that's a big fear that some of my clients have too. Like, well, what if I find out that my ex is in the group? So no fear. I do have an in-person group here in the South Atlanta area. One of my clients actually named it. It's called the Gray Sweater Club. I know it's a strange name, but I told her to wear a gray sweater to court because she was going to wear something a little too cute. And I would say, oh, no, black trousers, a white linen blouse, and a gray sweater, and or black, you know, button down, whatever, a blazer. And she's like, I'm going to have to go buy one. So she did. And about 2 years later, I said, well, what do you want to name the group? And she said, well, the Gray Sweater Club, of course. And I was like, what the hell would you want to name it that? And her name is Rachel. Hi, Rachel. So Rachel and I, co-host the group, and it's in person. So we do it at restaurants and public places and parks, and sometimes my home, sometimes her home. And it's there's 140 women in it. So I know, and it's free. Wow. It's just my way of saying here, and they can just, sometimes they just want to hang out and eat cheese, and other times they really want to, you know, commiserate, and I bring other experts in to answer questions for them. So whether you find an in-person group or a virtual one, but find something, don't go it alone. It's too scary to make that experience something where you feel like you're alone. And lastly, you know, do you have a good therapist? If you feel that therapy would be helpful, and again, therapy tends to be a longer term relationship, talking about the past and why things happen so that you can understand them better. Sometimes it could be for diagnosis and help for understanding why other people act the way they do. So there are many different types of psychologists, psychiatrists, therapists, and they have long acronyms after their names. So whatever type of personal therapist, counselor you feel you need, go ahead and do some research on that too. I did do a talk once about what the difference is between therapy and coaching. And I like to say that therapy is like when you have a knotted ball of yarn and you have to untangle it. where you're pulling out the little knot so that you eventually have a nice, beautiful thread or piece of yarn. And then coaching takes that same thread and knits a beautiful sweater with it. So you're creating something from what it is you unraveled from the therapy. You're now taking that unraveled mess into a nice, understood, clear, useful tool. But we're going to take it even further. We're going to create something useful with that hard work that you went through. And sometimes it takes a long time to unravel. It depends on how big is your ball and how tangled is it. And then what is it you want to create? The coach doesn't do that for you. You're creating your own future, and we help you with many different tools and skills. So yes, make sure you get the best coach and therapist for your case. Fear is not going to help you. And it's a little bit of a nature's way of keeping you moving though, right? If we never had any fear and everything was just vanilla, we would get stuck. So I want to thank Karen Covey for her time, her expertise. She is one of the most prestigious, longstanding divorce attorneys, divorce mediators, and coaches in the industry. So if you live in the Chicago area and you're in Illinois and you're looking for her expertise regarding the laws in your state, please be sure to look her up and make sure that you get her book, When Happily Ever After is Over. Right? So listen to her and I. If you have fear, it's not something to allow to take over your case. Make sure that you have the tools to manage your fear, and make sure that you have the support you need. So with no further delay, I thank Karen. I thank everyone for listening. Every time, whether you have listened to this podcast once, please write a review. Let everyone know the value that you get from the Thriving in Chaos Project. And if you've listened time and time again to all over 150 episodes over the past 4 years, please write a review and spread the good word about the resources at Better Divorce Academy. Thank you, everyone, and we'll talk soon. Keep thriving in the chaos. Thanks for joining me today. If you were inspired by today's episode, please share it with a friend or a loved one. My hope is you feel empowered to take some action, no matter how big or small. Action that allows you to step out of the chaos and thrive on your own terms. If this podcast added any value to your day, please review it on iTunes, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, keep thriving in the chaos.